Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This podcast has gone up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. It's going to be on YouTube. It's going to be on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, in the podcast section. It will also be on libertarianinstitute.org in the blog and the podcast section. I want to remind you that I wrote two books, Freedom Through Memedom and The Kids Are Not All Right. Search Mance Rader on Amazon. They're the first two things that come up. Or you can buy them on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. And on the website, they're only available for cryptocurrency. Today, I am welcoming back Lynn Ulbricht to the show. Lynn is an activist who is working as hard as she can to clear the name and get her son Ross out of jail. Ross started the internet website, The Silk Road, and was convicted on numerous charges, none of which were violent or presented any kind of victim. As I like to say always, no victim, no crime. Well, even though there was no victim and no crime committed, he was sentenced to two life sentences plus 40 years. Lynn's going to give us updates on Ross's case and what you can do to try and get Ross out of prison finally and see real justice be done. So this is a very informal interview. I consider Lynn to be a friend, so we talk like that. This is a very personal subject to me. If any of you have seen me interact online with anybody who tries to accuse Ross of something that he was not convicted of, you see that this is one of the really the only things that gets me upset. So this is a recording of a discussion that I had with Lynn Ulbricht. Enjoy. Hey, Lynn, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
I love talking to you. I really wish I had reached out earlier and, had a chance to, talk and catch up. But, how's life? How's life treating you?
Life's challenging as usual. I guess since the last time we talked, the Supreme Court denied Ross's petition, which was a very big blow. It was devastating, really. I felt like it was sentencing day all over again because we had had high hopes that they would not do that. They had indicated by not rejecting Ross's petition at the first pass that they were probably holding it pending Carpenter, which was another Fourth Amendment case. And then they ruled favorably for Carpenter, so we were really happy. You know, we thought, oh, great, you know. But what happened was that Justice Roberts wrote a very narrow opinion in the case of Carpenter and only addressed the privacy of cell phones, basically saying that the federal government had to get a warrant to track us with our cell phones instead of how they had been, which was with no warrant or any oversight at all. And they'd been doing that with internet browsing habits and history also, where they still can because they didn't address it, which is they do not need a warrant or probable cause to secretly surveil and delve into all our internet browsing habits and history, which reveals a lot of very relevant private information, and they do it with no oversight or disclosure or limits whatsoever, and that's legal because of an antiquated ruling that we were hoping would finally be updated for the digital age, and it hasn't been, not for computers.
And unfortunately, it seems like this Kavanaugh character that Trump has put up is Fourth Amendment. He's terrible on the Fourth Amendment, so it doesn't look like any of that's going to change, and it potentially could be worse.
Wow. Okay, I don't know that much about him.
Yeah, he's good on the second, good on the first, but he basically was in the Bush White House when they were writing up the Patriot Act.
Okay, great.
So it's a horror show. Mm. So I noticed Ross. Now, is Ross tweeting, or is he giving you things to put out?
Well, I should probably. Well, we can come back to what I was talking about before. But he is giving a friend. I'm not doing it. It's his thing with a friend of his is doing it. And basically it's his tweets, it's his words. But because he doesn't have internet access. And so it's not, it's definitely him, but it's not, you know, he's not on the internet.
Well, we look forward to hearing that. Now, did you want to expound more upon what you were talking about before?
Yeah. So basically with the, denial of Ross's Supreme Court petition, that ends our ability to appeal directly to the courts. And so that leaves us, there's a potential, one more thing we can do in a year, that's usually doesn't work, but we're going to do it in the court. Luckily and hallelujah, Judge Forrest has decided to retire. She's going to be off the case by the end of the year, which is, wow. I mean, you know, it's good for everyone who believes in freedom, justice, and fair trials. So in any case, so basically we're really wanting clemency. We're going to try to make a case for clemency. And part of that is the petition on change.org. It's been great. We're almost at 23,000 signatures in just a little over a week. I mean, it was a week ago yesterday that we launched it. We have, close to 23,000 signatures. And I see it as kind of a real show of support. I mean, I'm not sure how much a petition helps. I just don't know. But I know that some people who have been pardoned had a lot of signatures on petitions. So, yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I signed the petition. Okay. We also gave money.
Oh, well, thanks.
To try and get it out to more people.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's great.
And I think anybody who listens to this podcast probably can figure out that I'm not a petition signing person. I'm not a protest kind of person, but I didn't hesitate to do this. Anything that we can possibly do, and I encourage, if you're listening to this, I'll put a link down in the show notes.
Oh, great! Please
so you can just link straight through, sign that petition, do whatever you can, because who knows?
Yeah,
who knows the political? You know, we just saw this week that Cody Wilson, who was in trouble with the government for uploading plans onto the internet of how you can 3D print guns, mm-hmm. basically came to a settlement with the government that he's allowed to do it, and he will start doing it again on August 1st.
He beat the State Department.
Yeah.
Basically. Well, Cody did it. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I had him on the other day, basically what he said was, the Obama administration seemed like that DOJ seemed like it was a lot more, was hawkish about this. And he just basically time went by and people were in and out, and they just basically, he said it seemed like they lost interest, and just, he basically waited it out. So, you have the case of 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, conservatives were against gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Now no one's against gay mm-hmm. marriage. I mean, you don't hear anyone talking about it except a couple lunatics. Mm-hmm. So things change.
Yep.
And there is the chance that someone like Trump or the next president, or you can get somebody, I mean, somebody can put it in Trump, planted in Trump's ear that, this is a case that should, that was rife with corruption.
Yep.
I mean, the worst, I encourage anyone. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the corruption just to catch up, but, the first podcast, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well, where, you just went over all the corruption that was behind the scenes in this, and how if this was any other, if this was not so high profile, this would have just been thrown out.
Many things. Yeah. Or if we didn't have that judge, or, there's lots of things, but, absolutely. And by the way, one of the things that was used against Ross a lot is unproven, uncharged allegations of murder for hire. And I just found out yesterday that the AUSA in Maryland, who is holding the last remaining indictment that contains those charges has filed to have them dropped. So the judge has not ruled to have them dropped, but we expect that they will. It's kind of almost like a rubber stamp. So in very soon, the last remaining remnant of this allegation of murder for hire will have been dropped, and none of them would have been prosecuted or proven. None of them. So here we are, Ross is in prison now, so, don't need that propaganda anymore. And, by the way, even the alleged victim, Curtis Green, he tweeted that he doesn't think Ross was behind that. So, I mean, it's just, I had a criminal defense attorney, Jay Lederman. He said, oh yeah, they do that all the time. They smear people with this kind of thing. So, yeah, that's another thing that's just happened, is those charges will be dropped. And that's great also, because if Ross's sentence is commuted and he serves out whatever less time than double life plus 40 years that he'd have left, if those charges remained, he could potentially serve that sentence, leave prison, and go right into the Maryland jail waiting for trial there. But now it's been going to be dropped, we hope. And think. And so that means, a commutation would mean that he would serve whatever time the president said, and then he could be a free man. He wouldn't be a pardoned man. There's a difference between a pardon and a commutation, but neither of them have you in jail. So, he wouldn't be able to vote or own a firearm in the United States. So, I think he can live with that. So, in any case, that's kind of where that is. And so we have the petition, and yes, Ross has been, he's been wanting to just be himself and just kind of communicate for so long. And he finally is like, I just want to let people know who I am, because there's been so much smearing of him and people think he's this thug and this, and it's, kingpin. And I mean, I don't think too many kingpins believe in voluntary interaction, but whatever. And he really wanted to be able to, just tweet about him and his thoughts and his life. It's not going to be any big revelation, I don't think, of his case. Or we are going to have, though, however, I've been working with a team to pull together all the whole case. We have over 350 footnotes. A lot of it I didn't even know. It's public, but it's not readily available and wasn't covered by the media. And it's going to be a very dense and thorough narrative, really. It turns out it's not a narrative. It's just presenting the facts of this case. And when you read that, you're going to be like, oh, my God, I thought I knew about the corruption before. It's unbelievable. And that doesn't even count the sealed, undisclosed, and encrypted information that the government will not release. And I'd love to get my eyeballs on those, because who knows? Why are they hiding? Why don't they just let it all out? It's over,
Well,
unless they're hiding something.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee you they're hiding. There's stuff that they're keeping secret.
Yeah.
So go over, for those who didn't hear the first conversation we had, or haven't heard you before on podcasts, pick what you think is the most, just as far as not the judge, because we know that this woman is a monster and she's a filthy animal. What do you think is the biggest evidence of corruption that the state did, that the state was involved with in the case?
I think what comes to mind right away is the preclusion. Well, of course, that is the judge again, but it's prosecutors too. The preclusion of the evidence that there were two corrupt agents at the core of the investigation who were all over that site, had the ability to commandeer accounts, including the account of Dread Pirate Roberts, who, the supposed person running the thing, and act as that at DPR, and change chats, change posts, get into bank accounts, change passwords, PIN numbers, keys, blah, blah, blah. They had the keys to the kingdom, and the and had all this ability, and there's no way to know what they did, and the jury was not allowed to know. They had no idea they even existed. And I think, you know, that's, to me, a violation of the Brady Rule, which says that any exculpatory evidence, you know, evidence favorable to a defendant, must be made known. And it was not permitted to be made known. So, and actually what's kind of interesting, because we're talking about other, you know, people acting as DPR, after Ross's trial, because the government dumped, I think it's 4 terabytes of material on the defense. I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to wade through all that before trial. It was discovered that another, a person using the Dread Pirate Roberts account logged in to the Silk Road Forum after Ross was already in solitary confinement. So it's just obvious that he wasn't the sole person doing this, and that, you know, there's another story here. And, none of this was known to the jury, and a lot of other things, you know, a lot of things.
All right. So give us some background on the Supreme Court case again, and how the lawyer helped you to see exactly how they came to their conclusions.
Yeah. Well, there were 2 arguments in the Supreme Court petition. And by the way, Ross's petition was supported by 21 groups across the political spectrum, in 5 amicus briefs, which is a lot. We had Reason Foundation, Cato Institute, you know, those are, you know, more libertarian. And then we had many on the left, like National Lawyers Guild and criminal justice groups and Drug Policy Alliance, and just all came together on this particular petition to support it. And there were 2 questions. One was a Fourth Amendment question, which I talked about earlier, which is, does the government have the right to rifle through and basically surveil all of our internet browsing habits and history without a warrant or probable cause, with no oversight, in secret, without our knowledge? And it went even further in Ross's case, where they actually had a directional antenna aimed at his house, where they could see what was going on inside the house, and they did it without a warrant. You know, they can do this to us. They can be outside our house with a directional antenna watching everything we do, and not have to tell us. And the reason they don't have to tell us is because of an antiquated ruling from the Supreme Court based on the dial telephone that was ruled on in 1979, almost 4 decades ago, that ruled that if you gave your telephone number to the phone company, you relinquished your right to privacy to that phone number. That was it. Nothing else. And since then, they've used that, and they call it the third party doctrine, because the phone company is the third party. The third party doctrine to justify, as technology has advanced, of course, it's become much more revealing and invasive in our lives. They just continue to use the third party doctrine, even though it only referred to a dialed telephone number. And so, you know, like our political affiliations, our religious orientation, our sexual interests, our apps, our medical history, all this stuff is open season under the third party doctrine. And what Ross's case was trying to change was that they would need, all they need to do is go get a warrant. It's not like they can't do it, but they have to do it in the clear with a warrant and get a judge to sign off on the warrant, which doesn't seem to be very difficult. They do it almost automatically. And that's the only argument, and they wouldn't do it. And that's all of our privacy. So that's one thing. The other is, the other was a Sixth Amendment question. The Sixth Amendment addresses the right to a jury trial. And because it said that basically the judge used those uncharged, unproven allegations that a jury never ruled on, of murder for hire and some other stuff, lesser stuff, that to sentence him to a life in prison. But it was never ruled on by a jury. And it's required by the Sixth Amendment that we are sentenced by convictions decided by a jury of your peers, 12 people, not one judge who it's her opinion, it's true. And the Sixth Amendment was partially written to protect the accused from this kind of judge who, you know, that's why we have juries. So she did that. And that was the other argument. And apparently it's been a longstanding problem in the courts. There are many people in prison who have been acquitted or not charged with things that they're still in prison for because judges overrule it, override it and say, oh, no, I'm sentencing you anyway. This is outrageous. This is our right to a jury trial. This is our protection from the judicial, you know. And so that was also not addressed. I guess the Supreme Court didn't consider that important either. And so all of us have really suffered a blow to our protections in Ross's case being denied.
You said that the original case from 1979 said that if you give your phone number to the phone company, to a phone company?
Yeah, if they have your phone number and you're okay with that, that means you gave up your right to privacy on that number. It's the case of Smith versus Maryland. And actually, three judges dissented anyway. They said, well, wait, the phone number is kind of private, too. The phone number is part of the conversation, but they were the dissenters, and the other six voted for that.
Well, doesn't the phone company give you the phone number?
I guess because you're voluntarily allowing that. I don't know. Now, there you go. I don't know the exact. You allow that to happen or something. I don't know. I guess just by getting the phone number, you give up. But see, if they give you the phone number, it wasn't necessarily before the government couldn't necessarily get it. With the third party doctrine, they could get it.
Well, that's interesting because I guess they could make the argument that since they're giving you the phone number, it's really not yours because they can take it back at any time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
your right to privacy. I mean, that's basically like your IP address. Same thing. And that's what they use. They say the third party doctrine, but you're not really giving it to the government. You're giving it to, or you're using what, you know, Comcast gives you or whatever. And also, do most people know what they're giving up when they do that? You know, and of course we have no choice because you have to use the internet. So to be, you know, a viable participant in our culture now. So, but should the government have access to it without a warrant? That's kind of the question.
Well, I mean, I think that we've, and anyone who's been paying attention for the last 15, 16, 17 years knows that they've basically 9/11 was an excuse for them to just create this insane, insane spy apparatus. I mean, I guarantee you if they wanted to, they could just flip a switch and listen to what we're talking about right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's being recorded. We know that. We know that it's being recorded as metadata.
Yes.
And, they can pull it up at any time.
Yep.
So
it's true.
Yeah. I mean, the Fourth Amendment is dead.
Well, and that's horrible because really it's all we have between us and this monolithic surveillance state. And not that, you know, maybe it didn't stand a chance, but I would have liked to have seen it bolstered up a little bit here. You know, because what else do we have? You know, they've got the money, the means, the technology, the everything.
Yeah. I remember last time we talked, you said that you like talking to anarchists and volunteers because we're the ones who see through this.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no question. We just see right through
it.
Yeah.
We all know. Yeah. Exactly.
And most people see through it. The problem is their conditioning. Is such that it's just like, the classic statist, you know, well, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't have anything to hide.
Exactly. And the thing is, what they don't think through is that this information can be used, for example, to blackmail officials, judges, congresspeople. Maybe they're doing something on the internet that they don't want people to know. And maybe that can be used as some kind of leverage, for example, or let's say, whoever's in power wants to persecute a particular group or individuals that like this group or whatever, they can go into your internet and find out and go after you. I mean, it's got much greater implications than just, oh, I've got nothing to hide. And it's really a principle as well. I mean, privacy is very much linked to freedom. If you don't have privacy, you really don't have a free life. It's like if you're being spied on all the time, you are not free.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you were talking about how they can make, even before all of this spy apparatus, you would have, I've read stories that they came out declassified about how a CIA agent overseas would decide he liked the girl in Paris who worked in a cafe, but she had a boyfriend. And there was this one case where the CIA agent just decided, well, I'm going to dose with the highest amount of LSD I can the boyfriend.
Wow.
And we'll have him committed.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's crazy is in this day and age, they can't get away with a lot of this stuff because they're actually being spied upon because it goes right back on them. Mm-hmm. But think about it. Before all this spy apparatus happened, they could do stuff like that. I mean, they would kidnap, there are stories where they would kidnap prostitutes off the street in San Francisco and then basically pump them full of LSD and then torture them for 2 weeks to see how they would react.
Really?
Yeah, this is part of the MK Ultra program they've been doing this for decades.
Wow.
They've been doing this for decades, and it's just I think that, you know, like the judge, I can never remember her name because I don't want to.
Forrest? Her wing.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a game. People's lives and freedom are a game to her, to people like this. You know, and who knows? I mean, she might just be taking orders from on high. Somebody higher than her, you know, so.
Well, Chuck Schumer did recommend her to the bench. I'm not making any accusations, but that is a fact. And also, she was quite the heavy sentencer. He was Ross that year, as of his sentencing in May, end of May, was her fifth life sentence that year. She's very extreme in her sentencing. And to me, it's like, you know, life sentences have quintupled since the drug war in the 80s. Quintupled. There's a guy in there, well, there's more than one, but Ross is friends with a guy named Tony who he's doing life for marijuana. Marijuana. He's already done 13 years. He's got a life sentence for marijuana in Colorado. It's a federal prison, but it's located in Colorado where it's legal. And, you know, he's not violent. You know, he's, you know, and it's like there are thousands of people like this. And a lot of them are, you know, doing life sentences. When I was growing up, you had to be a serial killer, mass murderer, monster to get life. That was a danger to everyone you might come in contact with. That's who got life. And it was, and you had parole. Now there's no parole. So life means that's it. You're in for life. No break. No chance of any life at all.
Well, it's big business.
Yes, it is.
You know, the,
it certainly is.
You know, I don't know how, like in the case of Ross and the prison he's in right now, how much they would claim they get from the government so that they can house and quote unquote rehabilitate him on a yearly basis. But if it's $40,000, I would say maybe eight or nine would be used. So you have to ask, where's the rest of that money going?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I think it's around 35 or each one's probably different. But, and then there's all the subsidiary businesses, all the jobs. I mean,
yeah.
The town in Colorado, towns around that prison in Colorado, there's 12 prisons. Their economies depend on incarcerating people. And of course, the longer they're in, the more money they make. So it's basically human trafficking. They're making money off of human beings. And
it's slavery.
Yeah, it's basically making money off of human beings.
Yeah, and there are prisons, a lot of state prisons, where they are forced to labor.
Right, very little money.
You know,
yeah,
Yeah. And, you know, it's, if you read the 13th and 14th right. Amendment, you know, the 13th Amendment clearly says that slavery has been abolished except if you are convicted of a crime and they decide to take your rights away from you, yep. then you become a slave.
Yep. Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, the one thing talking about Ross's case, just really, and the thing because this can sound like it minimizes it, but it just shows the absolute absurdity of the prison system, of the judicial system, of everything, you know. And
yes, it does.
And it's, you know, I mean, we've talked before, and you know, I think of Ross at least once a day. And when I think of Ross, I think of you.
Oh, that's really nice.
And yeah, I mean, cause you know, I spend a good part of my day on social media trying to get the message out
yeah.
for, you know, liberty and everything. And you know, there's not going to be a day that goes by that Ross doesn't come up, or, you know, cryptocurrency and it all makes me think of him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think of you, and it's just so, it's really heartbreaking for me when I think about it, because, we know that there is no reason why he should be in that prison. I mean, and even you've said before, I think you said on the last episode that, you know, maybe he did deserve to do some prison time, but a double life sentence. And, you know,
even if all the allegations and charges were true,
right,
it still wouldn't add up to double life plus 40. I mean, it's like, you know, and I've noticed when people say, you know, comment, and they're like, oh, this site had this and that, you know, kiddie porn. And no, it didn't. And guns, well, briefly, I guess. I don't know, you know, or whatever. It wasn't like a gun site. In fact, it prohibited weapons after that. But it's like they, you know, human organs. I mean, they made child trafficking. All of this is lies. Complete lies. And I'm like, look, I'm not here to defend everything about Silk Road, but at least tell the truth about it. You know, and yeah. It was mostly marijuana as far as the drug
yeah.
part, small amounts. So,
yeah, I never was on the Silk Road, but a mutual friend of ours, Vin Armani, and he said he saw mostly weed. There was a couple like experimental kind of, I guess, psychedelics that were on there. And I think he said he saw like somebody was selling, an Australian passport or something like that. You know, like you would Australia. I mean, none of this stuff is, there's no victim.
No.
In any of this stuff, you know, and that's what I think Ross said in the tweet that came out yesterday, that he had read, you know, somebody, did you, or was it his friend that had gotten him the comments
yeah,
from
his,
the petition?
His friend. I'm so swamped yeah. with other things, but yeah, his friend.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, my comment on that was, you know, no victim, no crime. Mm-hmm. This is a travesty. And if, you know, if we're going to have a justice system, then we have to be able to have justice.
Well, yeah.
And there's no justice in this, you know, and I've been calling it for years, for about 10 years, the just us system.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because the only people that seem to get justice in that system are the people who are a part of it, you know, the people who work in it, or the people who have enough money to buy their way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else gets railroaded, and you know, and when it comes down to it, nowadays, I mean, how many actual cases go to trial?
Very, very few. 98% of people plead. And the reason is they're bullied and threatened by prosecutors that if they don't, even if they're pleading to something that they haven't done, if they don't and they go to trial, they're going to lose, which is true in almost every case. and they'll have a worse consequence, a worse punishment. So most people will plead. And so we've lost jury trials. We're losing the Fourth Amendment. Apparently, we're losing the Sixth Amendment and all kinds of other due process protections. And we're on the road to what? You know, show trials and basically a police state. I mean, this is, and it happens like this, little ways and precedents happen. And God, it's really alarming when you start delving into it. The other thing is, I don't understand why we even have a federal criminal justice system. We didn't always. This is something relatively recent. It's supposed to be up to the states. Why do we have this monolithic federal criminal justice system, which is just horrible? It's like, aren't we, you know, we're supposed to be a state, the United States. And, you know, that's a whole other issue, but it's like, it's absurd. It's, you know, marijuana is illegal federally, but legal in all these places. And, you know, it's like, how dare you override the states?
Yeah. I've read a lot of things over the last 10 years about how the federal government should not have any jurisdiction outside of Washington,
exactly.
D.C.
Exactly.
That it should end right there. And I think I was reading one thing. It said the 1940 Buck Act, like, changed that. If I remember it correctly, God, it's been about 7-8 years since I read it. It not only extended from border to border, like east to west coast, but it also made it like 50 or 100 miles out into the sea.
Well, and now what they're doing, forget 50 or 100 miles. The Southern District of New York goes into other countries, seizes non-Americans who have never set foot on this United States, drags them back to New York, and throws them in prison in the United States at our expense. Ross met many people like that in prison. There are many, many examples of they've just decided they're policemen to the world. And, yeah. I mean, Gary Davis, who's been extradited now to the Southern District of New York from Ireland, who was, a forum moderator on Silk Road, or allegedly, you know, he's facing a life sentence in the United States for being a forum moderator. I mean, what the hell? This, you know, it's like, this is what our tax money goes to. And this is, you know, I feel like our country and its values have been hijacked. These are not American values. This, you know, no, it's not.
The idea of America died a long time ago. The idea of the founding. And I'm one of those people, I don't even consider the Constitution to be a good document. I think it's actually awful because they've basically all these things that we're talking about, all this overreach, they've used the Constitution to do it. And, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, is, you know, they make these decisions. They come up with these ideas, you know, and they have no, if you were to explain the rationale that federal courts use right now to justices like Justice Story, which I think he lived 150 years ago. If you would explain it to him, he'd want to start another revolution.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
This is basically what they call corporate governance, where everything is run like a business. Where everything is just, everything has a dollar sign on it. And that's the way they see it.
Well, power too. They, you know, it's about power, but power and money, I guess, go hand in hand. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, power, you know, there are a lot of people who have historically tried to explain the difference between power and money. And they say that, you know, you can have money and have no power. But if you have power, you have access
money.
To whatever you need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, but, I mean, I just don't know how, I mean, I see these brainwashed lunatics on social media who, I had a guy block me the other night because, you know, he came at me. I had shared Ross's tweet on Facebook. And he came at me about, you know, how, you know, the Silk Road was had, you know, was selling child slaves.
Oh my God, it's lies. I know. It's
and I'm like, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well,
you know, and then he blocked me and announced that that a prominent anarchist, I don't know when I became prominent, blocked him. And it's like, no, you believe these lies. I mean, you know what it's like. You see what it's like.
Hopefully
anytime anybody posts anything about Ross, if it doesn't make it past the first if it's not the first comment, the second comment is about how he was a hired hitman.
Right.
And it's like, fuck, and you know, I'm sorry, Lynn, but fuck Wired Magazine mm-hmm. in the ass.
Yes.
Burn that thing to the fucking ground. God, I hate those bastards for what they are. I would never give a penny to them. And I swear anybody who's listening to this, if you give any money to Wired Magazine for anything, please stop. Just please stop, because they were the ones who perpetrated this whole thing about hitmen and, you know, and murder for hire and everything. And it's just not true.
Right. Well, the government didn't even charge it. But Wired Magazine charges it. And, you know, there was one article where Andy Greenberg just reproduced a chat from the trial transcript that the prosecution threw up there. That there was no proof that was Ross. There was no proof. That evidence was submitted by Carl Force, who is a corrupt agent now in prison. We're supposed to rely on this and it was there's no proof at all. Besides my own anecdotal point that there was perfect punctuation and capitalization in that chat, and I've never seen Ross hardly ever he's not one for that. He types like a techie. It's the most false, kind of phony sounding chat. It's ridiculous. But in any case, they put it up there with a picture of Ross at the top and then the chat. And I'm like, and I even said something to him about it. And I said, thanks a lot. You know, pretty lazy to just take a chat, throw it up there. And I said, thanks for putting the picture up. And, you know, he said, well, I have no control over what picture. And I'm like, oh, well, whatever. You know, I was furious because it's propaganda. That's what it is. And it's also clickbait, you know. And and then the people that throw in, you know, all this stuff that even the government doesn't say happened. And I'm like, well, okay, just make up stuff. And then you realize fake news is real. Trump's right. It is fake news.
You hate to say Trump's right about anything, but he's definitely right about this. You know, oh my goodness, I swear it's gotten to the point where the only time I get like violently upset on social media is when people have no clue about the facts of this case. And they're just spewing what they heard somebody else say and, mm-hmm. you know, the stuff that originated in Wired and, you know, I mean, God, it's like, just stop for a second and just go and do some research on your own.
Right.
Are you that, I mean, you found out this false information. Why don't you know, it's very rare that I post something on social media that I have to take down. And one of the reasons why is because if I see like a meme somewhere and I decide I want to share it, if I have any inkling that what's presented in it might be false, especially if it's based off of somebody a story or something like that, I go just Google for 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't have to go to Snopes to find it out. You can just find out, you know, and people aren't willing to do that because they want to believe. I honestly think that they want to believe that there's boogeymen out there so that they can rationalize their need and want for authority and government and people to rule over them.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So Let's make Ross a boogeyman, a guy who friggin' created a website where people could, instead of going down the street to the person who, because there's a black market created, has to carry a gun, and you could get into a violent situation or get in a crossfire of some sort. No, he created this thing where people could do things peacefully.
Yeah, and that drugs weren't necessarily the reason he did it. It was all about privacy and free choice in a free market. And it, you know, if people had decided just to stick to raw milk, books, and art, which was also on there, that's fine too. It wasn't supposed to be only a drug site, and it wasn't only a drug site. But you know, even Neil Franklin, who's 30 years experience as a police officer and drug enforcer and everything, who's now against prohibition and for Ross, he's a, you know, supporter, because he says, you know, I've seen the violence, you know, and he just, you know, it's just make, you know, he's against the drug war completely, because that's what foments the violence. Without the drug war, there would be no violence in about the drug. It would be like, you know, absolute fighting Smirnoff for whose vodka had the turf. You know, it's like ridiculous. Of course, you know, it would be. It's like the gangs are formed because of the price that's artificially driven up by the black market, like you said, the cartels, and, you know, all of these people that are, you know, involved and hurting our neighborhoods and kids. It's because of the drug war.
That's Neil Franklin with two L's?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just found him on Twitter.
He's a great guy. Great guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try and link up with him and maybe get him on.
Have him on. Yep. He's really a very well-spoken and can explain things really well and makes a great case for how the drug war is actually hurting crime solving, because so much is going towards drug arrests that other things like, you know, real violent crimes are neglected. First of all, they're more dangerous to pursue. Hey, wouldn't you rather go in and bust some people smoking pot or whatever then go after real killers, and you get your notch in your belt and you get your promotion and all that. You get to feed the mass incarceration monster, so that makes money, and then there's all the subsidiary businesses involved. For just for one little example, when I go to visit Ross in the prison, there's a vending machine with, you know, basically restaurant prices and 7-Eleven quality, you know. But, so we, you know, get crappy food basically and eat it. The same company owns all the vending machines in Colorado in every prison. Every prison vending machine is owned by the same company, county, state, and federal. And it's like, well, that's a sweet deal. And then I'd start wondering, how'd they get that deal? And who did they pay to get that deal? Because I think, you know, they're making a lot of money just in that. And then everywhere I look around the prison, I'm like, that costs a lot of money. Well, I wonder where that came from. And I start, you know, it's just like massive. It's a massive business and jobs program that is just costing taxpayers. Well, the drug war has cost now over $1 trillion since it started. It's been going on for over 45 years. And people are still doing plenty of drugs. So it doesn't work. It works for the government for, you know, getting money and power and intruding in our lives. But it doesn't work to stop people from doing drugs. They can't even keep drugs out of the prison.
Yeah, that's what Ron Paul said. Ron Paul said, how can we have a war on drugs when we can't even keep drugs out of a prison?
Yeah.
We can't keep them out of we're talking about a space that has a wall around it.
Oh, and there's everybody strip searched and searched. And all. No, they have drugs in the prison.
Yeah, and how do they get in there?
No. I'll leave that to your imagination.
Oh, I know. it's very evident how and who brings them in there. So, well, is there anything, we're moving in on 50 minutes right now.
Fine.
So,
I'd like to emphasize the petition, because, you know, maybe petitions, some people say they're not effective, but it certainly shows support. And I think that, you get enough signatures, it makes an impression. So I really think that if people would sign the petition, it doesn't take long, you know, that would be really helpful. And just spread the word about it. And anybody who has any contacts with, you know, high-level contacts or political contacts, really any political contacts, please let me know, because you never know who might be able to, you know, put in a word to consider Ross's petition for clemency. And so, you know, just any help along those lines. That's our goal, is to have his sentence commuted. And you know, that's our goal. So.
I'm really upset that you didn't have a chance to come to FeeCon so that I could, so my wife and I could buy you a meal.
Oh, I wanted to, but they didn't think I was on, they didn't think it was as appropriate content or something. I don't know. I can't remember. Oh no, not a good fit. I wasn't a good fit. So whatever.
Well, one of these days we'll get together.
Yeah, and, that'd be great.
We'll have a meal.
I'd love to.
And my greatest dream would be that it would be with Ross.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That'd be great.
So I'm going to say goodbye.
Yeah, and, thank
I
you.
Promise,
good to talk to you.
And I promise to have you back on sooner than it took this time.
Okay, great. Anytime.
All right, Lynn. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, bye. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I want to thank Lynn for the conversation. Remind you that I have two books, Freedom Through Memedom, The Kids Are Not All Right. Check them out on Amazon or check them out on freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, where you can buy them for cryptocurrency. I'll be back at you in a couple days with another podcast. So take care and bye.